This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure,
direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
...the Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona.
And the wonderful relationships, Fred.
So gosh darn wonderful. So gosh darn wonderful, Jeffrey.
It is gosh darn wonderful because of the wonderful relationship.
And we invite you to visit us at FredandJeff.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on iTunes. And you can even subscribe to our weekly newsletter where we let you know what's going on in the world of Fred and Jeff. So, Jeff.
Fred.
Things going on in the world of Fred and Jeff. We want to say a great big welcome home, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, it's nice to have them back. Though I know they enjoyed their time in Europe, it's very nice to have them back.
Well,
our listenership just doubled.
Yeah, it went from zero to two.
Yep.
And so we're very happy about that.
Amen.
What else is going on?
It's getting a little warm out there.
Let's see, Larry is just turned 10 yesterday, right?
That's right. Larry turned 10 yesterday.
Yeah.
And all kinds of crazy stuff for his birthday.
Yeah, we had tacos.
Tacos.
It was Taco Thursday at the MO Club.
Love that.
Our little cousin Katie Ronstadt.
Yes.
Just graduated from high school.
It just seems like yesterday she was in grade school.
And before that, in elementary school.
And then before that, just a dream in her parents'
minds. A sparkle in Josh's eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Sparkle in Josh and Kim's eye.
Lots of friends are getting, are graduating. We got friends graduating from South Point, friends graduating from St. Cyril's, St. Michael's, all over the place. So hopefully those kids are out there ready to take on the world and make it a brighter and better place than it is today.
Well, yeah. And speaking of those children, let's get them on an early start to those creative ideas. At Children's Museum Tucson, all through the month of May, is Art Month.
Art Month.
In May.
Sweet.
So they're going to have all sorts of projects and activities geared for our little kids, cadiddles.
Nice.
Over at the Children's Museum Tucson. The 17th, May 17th.
Yes.
Which was yesterday.
Yes.
Never mind.
Yeah. By the way, today is Larry's birthday.
Oh, I thought it was Saturday.
No, it was today. Uncle Fred.
Oh, well, we already celebrated it. So I'm covered.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, we celebrated it early because you know, everyone's kind of coming and going, but no, today is Larry's birthday. So happy birthday, Big Bear.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
Well, actually yesterday then was, Tucson Preservation Awards for 2014.
Yeah, who won?
I don't know. Because, you know, Damian Klinko was supposed to come on.
Yeah, Damian. Now that he got appointed some big
position. Yeah, he's a big wig up
position in Phoenix.
In Phoenix, yeah.
Can't deal with the little folks in Tucson anymore.
Very sad, but we'll get those things. This coming Monday.
Tomorrow.
Ronstadt Generations and Los Tucaneses.
You pronounce that very nicely.
Are going to be doing a concert at the Gaslight Theater celebrating Tucson roots and Americana, and that's 7 p.m.
And Larry turning 10.
And that was today.
Yeah, but they're going to celebrate it tomorrow as well.
I guess they could.
Yeah.
And Jeff, for the rest of this month through June.
Oh, here we go, folks. Ladies and gentlemen.
Midway through July.
I would just like to say, this is a disclaimer on the show, that Fred is now in the Fred zone.
I am going to lose my crap for the next month and a half.
You can't say crap on the radio.
Yes, I can.
Okay.
It's Bloom Night.
Bloom Night at?
Tohono O'Chul.
Right.
So the Queen of the Desert, the Night Blooming Cirrus.
Will rear her fabulous head again.
Sometime in July.
That's right.
But.
Even though it's May, Fred's decided.
No.
That folks,
no.
You get to now listen to him wax on poetically about Night Blooming Cirrus.
And we'll refer you to FredandJeff.com where you can see pictures of former Blue Night.
Now, are those Nights. Pictures that you took?
They're pictures I took.
Interesting.
They're professional pictures. They're available for a small cost in the gift shop on your way out the door. But
or you could just download them and you know keep them.
Now, if you go to TohonoO'Chul.org, you can subscribe to the Bloom Watch newsletter. So you'll get all sorts of information from the folks over at Tohono O'Chul on the status of the blooms, and you will actually, and this is a thing, I know it most likely will happen in July, but when bloom night happens, you get less than 24-hour notice, because these ladies decide instantly, all together, and you get one shot to really enjoy one of the magnificent...
Every single bloom will bloom at the same time, the same night?
Yeah.
They won't go in stages?
No. Once in a while, there'll be like individuals that might bloom a day or two early or day too late, but the vast majority, like 98% of the blooms...
And that's when you want to go.
All at once.
It's crazy.
In one night. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And did you see that picture that I got from my friend Marla Endicott at Precision Tool? The picture she took of all the blooms at the Sonoran Desert Museum, the Arizona
Sonoran
Desert
Museum. Oh, yeah, those are really...
Posted that on Facebook.
Those are really pretty.
Facebook page. Beautiful.
Yeah. So subscribe to the newsletter, the Bloom Watch newsletter, and you'll get all sorts of information. Plus, that night, they'll have programs. Our friends over at the Tony Chill Bistro will be open. It's a fantastic event, so gear up for it. I'm already started.
Yes, no kidding. And the last thing that I have today on this fabulous Sunday is, and it pains me deeply to promote this, but I love this guy so much. Our friend, baseball hero, Mike Fader, is now an employee of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Well, he has been.
That's right. And he is running shuttles back and forth from Tucson to Diamondbacks games. Great deals that Fader's put together. And yesterday they went up to Phoenix and celebrated Randy Johnson's, the 10th anniversary of his perfect game that he threw on the day Larry was born. I think he did that for Larry's birthday.
And weren't there like bobbleheads involved or something?
No, they had shirts, big 10th anniversary shirts. It was pretty cool.
Very nice.
So, folks, if you're interested in spending a little bit of time in Maricopa County, give Fader a call.
It's 3 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours of your time. It won't hurt you that bad.
Because you'll be in the baseball zone.
Right.
It'll protect you.
That's right. Take the kids, good family fun. Give Fader a call. We'll have his information linked on the Fred and Jeff Show website as well.
And, you know, we should ask our friend Jim, who's operating the board, to give us a little bit of happy trails to you, because we did lose one of our favorite Cowboys recently, your godfather, Juan Gibrack. So happy trails, Juan.
Happy trails, Juan. Loved you lots. All right, folks, we'll be back. We've got lots more here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Chuchon.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeffrey.
That is right, Fred.
And, you know, this show is one of those shows that is way past due in happening.
Yeah, well, you're talking about the content of today's show, but you know, I want to digress for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, this is the Fred and Jeff Show.
Yes.
Should we maybe consider seriously renaming it the Fred, Jeff, and Queen of the Night Show?
We could do that. I will work on the rebrand.
Oh,
and it will
go.
Be ready
instead
for next
having
week.
The little cord coming out of the radio
microphone.
The
Queen of the Evening.
We could have the little Queen of the Evening snake out through there with a little bloom.
She won't be snake, and she'll be on top. Full bloom on top.
Okay, Fred. That's how you like it, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you're here first, folks.
So, Jeffrey.
Yes, Fred.
Let's digress to the actual...
Even more?
To the topic of the show.
Oh, then we're going to is it regress or digress?
Digress, because we were talking about it.
We were regressing.
Then you went down the little bunny trail.
That I love so much.
And then we're back out of the hole.
All right. Hey, what do you know? It's a beautiful Sunday here in El Pueblo.
So this is a show that is, you know, we should have done this year. I mean, we've been thinking about doing it. It's on our list of things to do.
Yeah. So
it's on this show's bucket list.
Well, here's the thing. We need to explain to you guys. Sometimes people come up to me and go, how do you come up with these guests? How do you come up with these things?
They always ask me how I put up with you.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Mission accomplished. So Fred and I will sit down periodically, and after reading the paper, reading magazines, talking to folks.
Having history here,
you know, being here our whole lives. We've created this ongoing list of shows that we want to do. And folks, we've done over 400 shows, and we've barely scratched the surface of our list. Now, we've had repeat folks on the show.
Yeah, but
like Big Jim Griffiths and Jim Turner.
But those are like fun things, and they're always different.
Right. And because their content is so great,
right,
you cannot possibly do justice.
To one show,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember the show we had the gentleman on from Old Tucson.
Bob Shelton.
Yeah, and Bob Shelton, when the show ended, when we went off the air, we sat there and talked to him, and he shared anecdotes for an hour and a half with us that were awesome about John Wayne.
Mostly involved John Wayne in a bottle of tequila.
And fiery women. And so there's so much stuff going on there, and we've yet to have the opportunity to have Mr. Shelton back on the show. So, to your point, Fred.
This is a bucket list show for us.
This is totally a bucket list show for us.
So this actually, let's introduce Erica Way. She's park ranger for Karchner Cavern State Park.
Yes, hello.
And she probably thought she would never get a chance to talk today.
No, I've been listening to you guys and enjoying all the antics going on here in studio.
Quite anticful, aren't we?
We are, yes.
So Karchner Caverns is one of the treasures of Arizona, but it's got like a really cool history to
it. How do you say but to that? When you say but to that, it's like, I'm just kidding.
Well, I should say, and it's got a really cool backstory. It's got a cool history.
Absolutely.
So if you've had an opportunity to go down there, you know how magnificent it is. If it weren't for a couple of forward-thinking guys, we would never have had this treasure in our beautiful community.
Most definitely. Absolutely. Our cave, Karchner Caverns, and I say our cave, it's not mine. It's not ours in the studio. It's our little jewel here out in the desert for all of us to enjoy. It was discovered in 1974 by two kids from the U of A who were out looking for a cave.
Spelunkers.
We like the term caver, but that's okay. It means the same thing.
Now, wait a second. They were out there specifically looking for a cave?
That's correct. They were absolutely looking for a cave. And they
weren't out there doing anything else? And then something disappeared, and they think, hey, where'd my stuff go? Hey, there's a hole over there. What's down there?
No, it didn't quite happen like that. It was very intentional.
What did these two study at the U of A?
Well, Gary Tenen was studying entomology, and Randy Tufts was studying geology.
Okay, so there you go.
So they had a little bit of a background, both personally and professionally, because they had also been cavers. Randy had started caving when he was still just a child with his uncle, and his uncle would take him out and show him around all the wonderful caves we've got out here in Southeastern Arizona, and he continued doing that for the majority of the rest of his life, basically. And he met up with Gary when they were roommates together while studying at the U of A, and he introduced Gary to caving, and Gary just took to it like a duck to water.
I wonder if they started at Colossal Cave and then moved to Pepper Sauce.
No, I think it's the other way around. You start at Pepper.
Yeah, you start at Pepper Sauce.
You start at Pepper Sauce?
Yeah, you start at Pepper Sauce and move to Colossal.
Yeah, because Pepper Sauce Cave, and for those of you folks that don't know, Pepper Sauce Cave is up in Oracle. Mm-hmm. And Fred and I spent many a wonderful afternoon exploring Pepper Sauce Cave. And that's the kind of cave where you go in. When you come out, you look nothing like you did when you went in because you're covered from head to toe with mud.
Yep.
Remember that, Fred?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, those are good times. So anyhow, back to you.
but that's the thing, is they had been in many caves like that, caves that have been thoroughly explored by others. And oftentimes you can tell when others have been exploring because you can even
read their names on the wall.
Exactly. You can tell exactly who was there and when.
Wrappers and you know, soda cans.
Right. And so that's not exactly what you're necessarily looking for. I mean, there's still beauty to be found in these environments, but they were looking for somewhere that had been untouched.
Right.
And so they were drawn out to the Whetstone Mountains out in Cochise County, looking for caves, knowing that there's a great deal of limestone out there. And limestone's one of your key ingredients you need for a cave. About 90% of the world's caves are formed first in limestone. So they're out there in these limestone-rich ridges, and they're looking for caves. And they know what they're looking for is going to be sinkholes and depressions, because that's a possibility that there could be more cavernous space beyond. And so they're up in the higher elevations, actually, when they run into a miner.
Now, when you say higher elevations,
we're talking over 5,000 feet.
Okay.
So Cochise County is a little bit higher in the state.
Correct. And where the park sits, we're at about 4,600 feet elevation.
Okay.
So they're up in the higher elevations behind where the park exists today. And they ran into a miner. And, well, if anybody's going to know a little bit about the land there, the miner's a good bet. So they start asking questions of, you know, have you seen any sinkholes or depressions out here? And the miner says, no, not much up here. But there is one back down at the foothills. And so they go back down to the foothills, and they go and they find the sinkhole, and they crawl inside. And actually, Randy had even been in the sinkhole in high school back in 1967. He had been in that same sinkhole then. And he didn't think much of it because it was just a hole in the ground, some loose rocks and a little bit of graffiti, a little trash, nothing much to speak of. But him going back down there, you know, they're looking around and everything. And on that day in 74, when they found the cave, they were in that sinkhole purely because at that point they had run out of options and it was better to at least explore that than nothing at all. And they're in there and they feel a warm, moist breeze coming from within. So, as you guys know, when you're outside, you feel that warm, moist breeze moving around. But when you're in a hole in the ground and you feel a breeze coming at you from further in the hole.
There's either a bear next to you.
Right.
Or
listen for the snarling.
Right. Or something bigger in further in.
Right. So they follow the source of the air and it gets very low and very crawly, tight, squeezy in lots of places. And they eventually reach what we call the blowhole.
So, and I just have to interrupt you.
Yeah.
So our... crawly, tight, and squeezy, are those caver terms?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
See, Jeff and I could never be cavers because the holes that these guys had to get through to find the big room.
Yeah, you have to be a marathon runner.
No, you just have to be, no, you have to be thin.
Thin? Marathon running thin.
Oh, I didn't.
You know, you look like you weigh 12 pounds.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're thin.
There's a cave out there for every body shape and type. It's just the personality that wants to go into it. That's the biggest trick.
So what are you saying? We were scared people?
Hey, interpret it how you will.
Just a little guy over there. We're afraid.
No, I'd go through a cave, but I mean, I've seen the hole. I mean, I've seen the size of the. It's like, there's no way I get through that.
Well, and honestly, that first day, Gary and Randy couldn't fit through it either because the blowhole itself had a very, very small diameter, a couple inches at most. But they could feel the air moving through it.
Well, a couple of inches, so we're talking something that's like maybe the size of a...
We generally describe it as the size of a grapefruit.
Wow.
Yeah. So a very small hole. Clearly no human being is going to actually fit through that.
Is that the same hole you were talking about, Fred?
Well, that's not the hole, the pictures I've seen.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. You've just seen pictures of it.
He's seen the pictures of the after effect, after what Gary and Randy did. Because since they couldn't fit through...
Yeah, they probably chiseled it.
They had to chisel it out. Oh. And they did open it up. And if you can imagine taking a standard wire coat hanger and instead of untwisting it, just stretching it until you had a kind of oval shape. That's how big they enlarged it. Just big enough that Gary, who was the smaller of the two, could fit through. Randy.
And Randy could run away.
Randy, they actually continued enlarging it a little bit more for Randy because Randy's a bigger guy than Gary. And Randy ultimately ended up having to take his shirt off to fit through. And that, though, for them was the big indicator of nobody's been here before. Who could have been here before? Because nobody else would have fit. And that was the only opening. That's the natural opening from that original sinkhole that had been known about into what is now today the big room of Karchner Caverns State Park.
Oh, that hole led to the big room?
Mm-hmm.
So was it just a drop down into the big room? How do they get from that hole all the way down? Because that's what, three stories tall?
No.
Not that tall?
We're actually a horizontal cave. We don't really lose a whole lot of elevation as you go through the cave. We're in a pretty shallow hillside and a shallow cave in
What do you call the great room that's got the giant stalactite that comes all the way
Kublai
down?
Khan.
Kublai Khan.
Yeah, but what's the name
that's
of that
in the throne room?
The throne room, okay.
Right, so you have to go through the big room first
to get to the
throne room if you're going on what is now what we call the original Discoverer's Trail.
Got it, okay.
Of course, today we have a much, much easier way that involves no tight, squeezy, crawly spaces for anybody if you want to come out and join us.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they found the big room first. and they spent a significant amount of time exploring the big room, but not even really much that first day. The first day, they actually left pretty quickly. They had spent a lot of time trying to get in, and it was just the two of them, and there's a whole lot of things that can go wrong if you're out there wild caving, and nobody knows where you are or under the surface. And so they decided to call it quits pretty early on the first day, and then they continued coming back out. When they came back out, though, they'd bring a few friends that they swore to secrecy with them, trusted cavers, people they know could get in and get out and would not damage things, because that's what they were looking for, was that pristine cave, and they worked hard to make it happen and keep the one that they found in that same condition.
Yeah, and I mean, even to this day, it's amazing how pristine that space is. So, okay, so we're at the bottom of the hour. I knew it was going to go fast. We've got lots more to talk about. We've got all kinds of time on the other side. So, folks, stick around with us, because we got lots more about the Karchner Caverns here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
I'm hoping you'll want me and show me the way. Touch me and give me sign. You are the queen of my mind.
This portion of The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeffrey.
And
we invite people to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and even subscribe to this Tome of Wisdom and Entertainment on iTunes. Now, Jeffrey,
we
had described this show earlier as our one of our bucket list shows. And with us today is Erica Way, who is a park ranger with Karchner Cavern State Park.
That's right.
And we've been talking about the history of Karchner. So when we left off, we were talking about Randy and Gary just barely breaking into a small antechamber and swearing to secrecy a couple friends to go out with them.
Yep. It did take off pretty quickly from there for them. They spent about a year exploring the cave. They initially started in what we call the big room, and they made their way through some connecting passages and rooms into what we call today is the rotunda and throne rooms. And you can tour the rotunda and throne room or the big room. The big room's only open seasonally.
Well, let's take a step back first, because, you know, help us sort of, you know, guide us through as they, you know, they get in there and they sort of are figuring out exactly what it is they got themselves into. I mean, that's one sort of bit of the story. But the other part is I remember that there were just specific trails that they would use because they didn't want to foul anything else there. I mean, to get in, you have to do something destructive.
Right. They did have to enlarge the blowhole to be able to simply fit through. But even from that very first day going in, they're setting about a trail system so that they are confining themselves to a very specific portion of the cave floor and not interacting with any of the rest of it, because they want to leave it pristine. They want to leave it as beautiful as nature created it for us. So they're setting out trail systems. They're using reflective markers that they're leaving behind throughout the cave. And this process continued on. So every single time they would go and make a trip in, they would follow their same path and then see if they could push leads beyond where they had last been to. And when it was time for them to turn around, they'd follow their exact same trail markers out. And you can still see their original trail markers in various areas throughout the cave today. So they took a great deal of care trying to make sure that they were staying as confined as possible within this environment.
Now, those of us who've had the opportunity to go in after it's been developed,
And I think that's quite a few people, isn't it?
Lots of people.
How many folks have been through the caves?
There have been a lot of people through.
Do we have a number, like 1.5 million?
I think 20.
20 million?
No, 25. total.
25 total. Now, it is more than that. I don't have the exact figures.
Wow.
But when
we're
both rooms...
We're probably talking hundreds of thousands of people have gone through.
Absolutely. And when both rooms are open, we can accommodate over 700 visitors in a single day through the cave.
Wow. Right. Wow.
But, you know, when people... I mean, you know, we go through there or you see pictures... Mm-hmm. That's not the view that those guys had when they first went through. I mean, they had a light on their helmet.
Correct.
And probably very limited visibility.
Yes. And the lights they were using were nothing like what current cavers like myself would use for a headlamp. They were using carbide miner's lights.
Oh, yeah. The technology has been enhanced tremendously.
Considerably. And so there's a huge difference there as far as that goes. And honestly, it's been said that they... came, you know, and they were checking out the show trails and everything as development continued along and never really saw it lit up until the developed trail was in.
Wow.
They never saw it the way that we see it today because of the lighting situation. Because naturally, of course, there's no light in there other than what light they brought with them.
Right.
So
how long did it take to get them from where they were just barely discovering it? They had brought some friends to take notes with them, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
To them finally saying, okay, we gotta turn this over. We gotta share this with more people.
Well, it didn't quite go exactly like that.
How did it go?
They planned on it being that they were just going to continue trying to protect and preserve it themselves. And their first step was, well, if we buy the property that this sits on, there we go. We can close off access to this sinkhole. Unfortunately, they went to Forest Service, and Forest Service said, we don't own that property, so we can't sell it to you. They look up the local residents from St. David, the Karchner family, who own the property, and approach them about purchasing it. And the Karchner said, no, we're not interested in selling. It was cattle ranch land for them. So since the Karcheners weren't interested in selling it, and it is their private property that these guys have been kind of traipsing on and under, in which it was fine. There was no trespassing notices or anything like that. They realized that they needed to figure out who the Karcheners were and approach them with a proposal for what to do with this cave. So they do a little research, find that the Karcheners are a pretty trustworthy-seeming family. James Karchner had been superintendent of schools in St. David and had at one point in time in his younger years done some caving himself. And so they felt comfortable making an appointment with him, going over to his house, and they took some slides of caves out there that people have known and do damage in and do all sorts of other nasty things to, and what happens when secrecy is not kept. And then they took pictures of this cave that was on the Karchner's property to show them what they had and what they didn't want it to become.
It must have blown him away.
Absolutely. James Karchner actually did go through the blowhole in his early 80s to actually go see the cave himself, not just in pictures. He wanted to know exactly what he had on his property. So he did go out and see the cave. And he agreed with Gary and Randy that protection was the only way to do this. And they all agreed that one way to protect it was to, in fact, develop it into a show cave, but provide educational components for all the visitors who come through about cave conservation and preservation, and to develop it in a way that would instill those values as well. They realized really quickly, though, that between the Karcheners and Gary and Randy, that the funds didn't exist to make that happen. And so they started approaching other agencies to see if anybody was interested. Of course, they can't just tell them that, hey, we've got this cave out here in Cochise County that, you know, we want to protect and preserve. They were doing all of that in secrecy as well. Gary and Randy even came up with pseudonyms when they would approach people and just try and keep it as secret as possible. Now, few agencies turned us down, but at this point in time, Arizona State Parks was interested in expanding the park system, and so they said, we'd like to know a little more about this. And so the secrecy started getting a little broader at that point, but still only to those who absolutely needed to know.
So the veil was being lifted just slightly.
Just slightly enough
so
to kind of push things forward to make it actually happen.
And how long did that take?
Well, we were discovered in 1974 by Gary and Randy, and it took until 1988 until we were signed on as Arizona's 25th state park.
Wow.
So 14 years total.
That's a long time. I mean, that's a long time to keep that a secret.
That's phenomenal secret keeping. I can't do that. I say we have the best job out there. We get to share this secret with everybody else.
That's awesome.
So
So in 88, they signed on as a state park. Mm-hmm. And then the cave actually opened in 99.
Right. Took another 11 years to do the development. Because we didn't just start with development on day one after we purchased the park. Because if we're going to develop it under the concept of conservation and preservation, we have to know a little bit about the environment that we're trying to preserve. So there was years worth of research done in the cave, along with going out to other show caves. You guys mentioned Colossal earlier, talking with them, how their tours operate, and as well as caves all over the place. What works for them? What doesn't work for them? What would they do differently if they got to start over brand new like we were getting? And so we went around and we did all this research both in the cave and outside the cave and came up with a plan for development. And we finally broke ground on the tunnel system, so we don't have to go through that sinkhole anymore. we broke ground on that in 95.
How long did it take to actually map the entire cavern? And was that done by exploration, or were they using like Echo, sonar stuff? Or
some of that was actually done by Gary and Randy. They actually had done a fair amount of the mapping, and a lot of what we've done since then has just been going through and verifying their maps. Of course, cave mapping's a skill and an art form, and it's not necessarily super precise, but it's getting better. And we're actually continuing to map the void of the cave using LIDAR mapping and 3D imaging using lasers today. But, of course, that wasn't available at the time.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of it was originally just sketched out and general measurements taken. Wow, just like you would have a survey crew on the roadside kind of trying to figure out where the road was going to go. That's how a lot of the mapping for Karchner happened.
But here you're doing something three-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know how tall, how wide, how deep.
Correct. Yeah, you got to measure those elevation changes along with different directional changes. It's pretty impressive.
That's very impressive. So then it took those years to develop it, and boom, 99, the gates open, and the world just jumps in and said, I mean, it's just the coolest thing.
Absolutely. We get visitors from all over the world on a regular basis. It's one of my favorite things when I've got a group assembled up out there is to find out where everybody came from. It's kind of like who can win the prize of having traveled the farthest to come see this cave. And it's pretty impressive. I've had amazing diversity within my groups because we are a show cave. I lost my words there. We are one of the top show caves out there.
In the world.
Right, and one of the newest, which means that we are at the cutting edge of how to go about preserving a show cave.
Show caves that have been around for 20 years, 30 years before Karchner's Caverns opened, didn't have the luxury of using the technology you all have today.
Right.
So our cave
benefit of having other caves opened
question how would you do it differently. Mm. Yeah, we definitely benefited from not being discovered till 74 and not being developed until the mid to late 90s.
Now, I remember reading something not too long ago that you guys were going to have to limit or change something because of the humidity so many people want to come into the cave, and just the humidity that people would bring with them in the cave was making changes to the cave. Am I remembering that correctly?
You are, absolutely. Well, and as you all probably are well aware, water is a precious commodity here in the desert.
Sure.
And everybody goes into the cave coming from the Arizona desert. We go in dry skin, dry hair, dry clothes. And the moment you first set foot in the tunnel, you can feel the humidity. Because naturally, the cave has about 98 to 99% humidity, which is incredibly high for this environment. But as we go through, our dry hair, dry skin, dry clothes is all sucking up that humidity. So we've actually added a new measure that wasn't originally there when we first opened in 99, which is right before you go into the cave on the tour. You actually get sprayed down. You get a quick little mist shower.
No way.
So that we're putting a little bit of that moisture into you, so you're taking less of it from the cave.
How much moisture was leaving the cave? Were you guys able to track that?
Yes, we've been tracking the humidity levels for years. It's been a minor amount, and we've done a few other things to implement misting in the cave in the evenings. We do go in and do some additional misting to add back that extra, but we check the humidity levels throughout the cave on a regular basis.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool when you go in. It's sort of, you get locked down, essentially.
Right.
There's like a sally port of sorts.
A lot of folks think that we're taking in through, we're getting ready to go through a biohazard static clean room sort of thing.
Oh, you mean right when you come into the cave?
Well, yeah, it's actually just part of the tunnel, but it just makes you that much more aware of what we're bringing into it. And you are thinking, man, it would be beneficial.
And aren't we stepping on stuff, too, to clean the bottoms of our shoes?
Not necessarily to clean the bottom of your shoes, but we do keep the trail system throughout the cave wet. Which we've also taken care of that from a safety concern. It's a concrete trail, but we've got aluminum oxide in the concrete to give it that extra texture so you're not going to slip. But we do keep it wet. And it's not so much to keep your shoes wet or clean, but what happens is we shed. I know I shed hair and skin and lint.
Oh, yeah.
And all of these sheddings.
Fred's not a shedder if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, I pride myself.
He can shed skin still. So
well, but he's got hairy arms. He's like Gorilla Boy over there.
I plastic coat myself every morning.
Well, so your sheddings, we want to keep those contained. We don't want furry formations out there. And lint, with all the detergents and fabric softeners we use, have all sorts of chemicals in them that we don't want ending up on the formations. So keeping the trails wet and keeping a concrete curb on either side means that the stuff that we shed falls down in the trail and the curbs keep it contained. And if you think about wet lint versus dry lint, wet lint doesn't get airborne. Dry lint, there's no telling where it'll end up.
Right. That's very cool. So what is the number one most amazing thing that people say that they've seen when they come to Kartra for the first time? Is it Kublai Khan?
Kublai Khan absolutely ranks up there. And the presentation we do with Kublai Khan, not that it needs any formal introduction.
The Smithsonian lit the cave. The light designer from the Smithsonian.
Yes, Frank Florentine.
He lit the cave.
He was the one who lit it. And when you get to Kublai Khan is the tallest known column in the state of Arizona, stands 58 feet tall, and it is a truly impressive structure showcased in our throne room. And we do a special light show on it.
Presentation, yeah.
Right. It's just the lights dim and come up in an artistic manner, and you get some nice soft music, but it really is inviting you into that environment there with Kublai Khan and really closes you off to the rest of what the guide's been talking about or anything else. It's just creating that one-on-one experience for you with the cave.
I remember when I first saw Kublai Khan, and Fred and I were lucky enough to get to go through some of those early groups.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. I mean, it was almost, as a kid, that was, 15 years ago?
99?
Yeah, and so we were clearly much younger. But I remember just standing there looking at Kublai Khan going, oh, my gosh. I mean, we're looking at the beginning of time it took to form this thing here. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
So have they done any dating on Kublai Khan? How long did it take that structure to those stalactite, the stalagmite, to meet?
Well, you'll find that we love the answer of a long time.
That's a trivia question coming up, folks.
There you go. Actually, we don't know specifically on Kublai Khan, but of the formations that we have dated, because we've tried to do some basic dating on formations that won't cause excessive damage to the cave. Of those that we've dated, we found that the oldest is probably about 200,000 years, not really any more than that. So when you think about a formation like Kublai Khan growing and joining, becoming a column like that in the middle of this impressive room in 200,000 years or less, that's amazing.
It's amazing. Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate you spending some time with us and our listeners to talk about Kartra's Caverns. And folks, if you want to go out to Kartra's Caverns, Fred, and I've got Kartra Caverns, Fred. Thank you. We've got some tickets, right, Fred?
Two adults and two children for Kartra. For the first person to email me at fred@fredandjeff.com with the correct spelling of Kublai Khan.
Kublai Khan. All right. Thanks so much. We really
Absolutely.
Appreciate what you're doing out there. By the way, how long have you been out there as a tour guide?
I've been out of the park for about 3.5 years now.
How do you like it?
I love it. I have the best office in the world.
Yeah. That's very cool. With the couple seconds we have before the break, anything coming up that you can share with us?
Yeah, we've got some moonlight hikes that are going on, one a month on the park. So if you are looking for a little getaway on a weekend with a nice full moon out there, we're doing moonlight hikes. We're also doing a new tour where you can come and view the cave similar to where Gary and Randy would have seen it, where you've got the helmet and the headlamp going on. That happens Saturday nights at 5:30. Awesome. You can make reservations.
All right, folks, stick around because we'll be right back with more.
What we're going to do right here is go back, way back, back into time, when the only people that existed were troglodytes, cavemen, cave women, Neanderthal, troglodytes. Let's take the average caveman at home, listening to his stereo.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, the Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeff.
That's right, Fred.
And talking about some of the events coming up in Tucson, well, in the region, I guess, we have a former city council member and community... what would you call yourself, Brent? The community fool?
Man about town?
Sir.
Sir? Sir Brent Davis.
Oh, royalty. We have royalty in the studio today. Nice.
He's actually the executive director of the Friends of Karcher Caverns, and they have a little event coming up pretty soon.
Well, we do, and thanks for having me on. I this has been a great show.
Well, I had to pay Jeff $20.
Okay.
Seriously?
Well,
so you owe me.
Where's
yeah.
my $20?
You marked it up, huh? I'm the executive director of the Friends of Karcher Cavern State Park. The Friends was founded when the cave was, actually prior to it, and their sole purpose at that time was to raise a whole bunch of money for the grand opening, which they did. And those of us who remember 1999 remember that the cave had a huge celebration when it was opened. And the Friends are the ones that kind of guided that and raised the money for it. And now we're a small organization. We support the volunteers, and there are a number of volunteers, and I'm sure that they'll be talked about. We support them. We do a couple events every year honoring them. We provide them with gifts and things. And we also do educational programs, and we support the preservation of the caverns. We also run photo tours, which is pretty interesting. If you pay, I think it's $175, up to 15 people can go in with their cameras when no public's in there and photograph the caverns. And we've had a number of successful events like that over the last several years, and there are more coming. It's on our website, www.friends, it'd be FR, Friends of Karcher Cavern, so FKCSP.org. I always have to think about that.
Yeah, we'll have that on our website.
Good.
Because I can't listen to you anymore.
Wow, what does that mean?
No, I mean the letters.
Oh.
Clearly Brent owes you more than just $20.
That came out like really, really bad.
It did.
Yeah. And no, this is radio, so
that's
no one
complicated.
Can see the look on your face. The daggers you were staring at.
It was daggers. No, when he started saying all the letters, I'm like, I lost track.
Yeah.
That's why I was saying
Gut
it
spread.
Will be on the website.
Yes.
I wasn't trying to insult you.
But you did, and I'm okay with that.
Well, I insult you all the time.
I know.
Publicly and privately.
And it's not like it's ever happened before.
No, never. First time.
No, I just, for some reason, it was like I just couldn't follow the letters anymore. So I'm like, it'll be on the website.
But instead of just saying that, you had to give your little editorial on, yeah, I just can't listen to you anymore. That was nice, Brent.
I'm sorry, Brent.
That'll be on the blooper reel, Brent.
Okay.
So we'll have Ed.
So, Brent, thanks a lot for coming on. How long have you been involved with the Friends?
About 3 years.
Okay. And when was the cavern open? Remind me. I know we talked about that earlier, but...
1999,
and you've been...
Last century.
The last century.
It was actually almost the last act of the last century.
Yes.
In Southern Arizona.
Close to popping a cork, right?
We did pop some corks.
Yes. Yeah. All right, so that sounds to me like that's a trivia question.
Oh, you know what? That is a trivia question. We could say what day were the caves dedicated in 1999?
Well, I was going for the year, but that's fine if you want to say what day.
Well, we talked about it earlier in the show.
True. So,
and
what
I'm
do
not
you guys give away?
Well, how about a dozen roses from our friends at Mayfield Florist?
Yeah.
Gift certificate to 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Nice.
Some flowers and dinner.
Very good.
Can I play the game?
Sure.
Oh, no.
Can you email Fred right now real fast?
You bet.
Yeah, so email me, fred@friendjeff.com, and first person to send me that information will get those two lovely items.
Very cool. Well, you guys, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. I mean, Carchester Caverns is one of the great places, new discoveries in Southern Arizona, and we really appreciate everything that you guys do to help folks enjoy it.
Thank you, guys.
So take care. And folks, that's it for the show today. We got plenty more jocularity next week.
Next week's going to be awesome. We have Jim Turner coming on. What?
Good morning, Fred. Is the coffee just kicking in? What's going on
I don't know. I just got goofy for the last 5-10 minutes.
Wow. So, woo. And we got Jim Turner on the show next week.
Yeah, he's going to be talking about, he's got some new stories that he's been working on about the history of actually our relationship with Northern Mexico.
All right, very good. All right, folks, so you heard it here first, and you'll hear it on the newsletter second. You'll read it next if you sign up for the newsletter. So we'll see you next week here on The Fred and Jeff Show.